drawn against their families long before they were born, consigning them to a segregated world on the east side of this Midwestern city. They were black boys in a white world, running, jumping, and excelling inside that world. They played most of their basketball games through that cold winter in a converted rodeo cow palace on the Ohio State Fairgrounds, where you could still get whiffs of the horse manure. But no one seemed to mind, as the East High Tigers couldn't stop winning. The gym at the high school couldn't accommodate the thousands who wanted to see them play. Their games were often broadcast on radio, an uncommon occurrence at the time for any high school basketball team. Come baseball season, the crowds vanished. At the away baseball games, there would sometimes be only one fan in the bleachers rooting for the Tigers, and that was the coach's wife. The boys actually didn't mind playing their baseball games away, in and around rural Ohio, because the baseball diamonds were better at the other schools. They simply set about swinging their bats and blasting the ball into the cornfields. They looked like figures out of Negro League baseball, that professional and segregated league, which was by now almost two decades removed from existence. The umpires, white men raised in segregation, sometimes would gawk at the East High players with awe. They were so proud at game's end, tired and smiling as the farmland receded into view on the ride back home. The proud black boys never complained about the well-to-do schools and all their fancy equipment. They realized they didn't have the luxury of escaping the crazy and murderous times. They were in the center of it all. Martin Luther King Jr.'s presence hovers over that season. Reverend Fayal Hale was the unofficial minister of the East High basketball and baseball teams. He had known King from his own Georgia days and was the first to bring the prophet of black America to Columbus. The gunning down of King in Memphis on April 4, 1968, was an awful deed that unleashed riot and rebellion from Los Angeles all the way to the East Coast itself. Small pockets of Columbus burned on the city's east side. In nearby Indianapolis, 168 miles west of Columbus, Bobby Kennedy spoke movingly of King's death, and blacks and whites were weeping around him like a gospel chorus. Then, like King, Kennedy also fell after being shot by a crazed assassin. Hale had counseled these East High athletes with King-like optimism. He had told them to hold on. He had told them change was going to come. Now, with King's death, Hale, who had given the citywide eulogy for King, was himself emotionally spent. King and his wife Coretta had slept in Reverend Hale's home. It seemed, at ground level, that a nation was unraveling. It was a year of endless apocalypse. King and Kennedy had warned that black and white must come together, though King long before and with much more passion than Kennedy. But now the question loomed. What integration? East High, in the 1968-69 school year, and in spite of integration laws, remained an all-black school. In the fall of 1968, when Jack Gibbs, the first black principal at East High, opened the doors to the cavernous school, he did not know what to expect. It had been a hellish summer. He confided to his wife, Ruth, that he was worried that some returning students might think of the all-black school as a laboratory now for dissension and protest. He vowed not to let that happen. The air was uneasy and unpredictable when the doors swung open and the school bells rang out. Gibbs had his own tortured story. He had escaped Harlan, Kentucky, a dangerous coal mining town where he had seen murderous deeds on the dirt streets. In Columbus, he worked nights, finished high school, and got into Ohio State University, where he played football. He was a bench warmer, but had gotten into a very important game, Michigan, of course, and made the play that turned the game around. In time, he found himself on East Broad Street.